Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim is up in New York preparing to do some work with CNN International, so he joins us by phone today. Also want to let you know we're sponsored today by ZipRecruiter. Right now, listeners to the Three Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More on them a little bit later in the podcast. And Jim, of course, yesterday was Memorial Day, a day where many millions of Americans stopped to remember and be thankful for those who have worn the uniform of the United States, and especially those who have given the ultimate sacrifice. And leading into Memorial Day weekend, one of our favorite people in Washington, Defense Secretary and retired Marine Corps General James Mattis, gave an interview to John Dickerson as part of Face the Nation. So the interview aired on Sunday. Jim, we have talked about why we like General Mattis a number of different times. He's very blunt. He lets people know exactly where they stand and what he will do if they do not, in fact, make good on their word. What seems to be a very simple question, and it gets asked of a lot of people in the national security realm, came towards the end of the interview, and a very direct answer that I'm not sure John Dickerson was expecting.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Jim, that's just not only is that classic Mattis, it's great that we have a Secretary of Defense that kind of has that mentality that it's not our job to chew our fingernails. It's our job to project American power and American leadership, and the bad guys can worry about it.
Absolutely. A couple of ways this is ironic. First of all, it really does sound like a Chuck Norris joke, doesn't it? The boogeyman checks under his bed for James Mattis at night. The second thing is that's one of my favorite questions to ask people who work in the national security arena. And it's like usually I get a pretty interesting answer. And what if there's any pattern I've noticed, there's not usually one thing that they mention. But it's usually whatever persistent threat is not in the news at that moment. Sometimes it's North Korea. Sometimes it's hackers and cybersecurity and you know, threats like that. Sometimes it's Russia. It rotates, but usually whatever we're not thinking about is what the national security professionals are thinking about. But man, you know, one, and unfortunately, you know, Mattis has now ruined that question because everyone's going to offer some variation of that. It'll be, you know, I keep other people at night with snoring or something. Some sort of answer that kind of, you know, plays down, which is unfortunate because then maybe like the question of, you know, what do national security professionals worry about? Or concerned about or focus on that the general public might not be paying attention to. But it's a terrific answer. It actually describes exactly what the United States wants to hear from the Secretary of Defense and a general sense. It kind of, you know, it may contrast with one of our other martinis pretty well. The exact opposite phenomenon there. But if one more reason to salute James Mattis, and look, Greg, we managed to get through without raising the tears in his eyes comment that at least one listener has said we're overdoing it. So we left it out that time, Nick. That was just for you.
That's true. And he's given us more material. We can kind of go on this for a little bit. But yes, if you enjoyed the humble swagger, if there is such a thing of General/Secretary Mattis there, enjoy it for the next few minutes, because later in this podcast, you might not have quite the same swagger. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now, Jim. And this was your lead item in the Morning Jolt. This was a story that a lot of people kind of forgot about over the weekend, but it was considered the latest bombshell on Friday. And I think if Wolf Blitzer gets paid by each time he utters the word bombshell, that guy's going to be able to retire in about a week or two, because pretty much every time the Washington Post or New York Times says something, it's a bombshell. And he's pointing his pen at the screen, and it's very, very dramatic. But anyway, the bombshell this time is that Jared Kushner, the special advisor to the president, who also happens to be his son-in-law, allegedly asked to set up a back channel, a private back channel to the Russian government during the transition, and apparently wanted to do so given the Russians' own facilities, whether they were concerned about intel leaking, which obviously has been an issue, or not. Who knows what exactly was the premise for that? There's been reports since then it was the Russians' idea, and it wasn't Kushner's original idea. either way, Jim makes the point that the reflexive defense of Jared Kushner is a bit head-scratching. Let me read a bit from the lead item in the Morning Jolt today. This is Jim now. I get why someone who voted for Donald Trump would defend the president. Trump descended that escalator and went about the process of winning over your vote. He did it in the primaries and in the general election. What I don't get is any reflexive defense of Jared Kushner. Trump earned your vote and presumably some amount of trust. What did Kushner ever do for you? And then you point out that he's a real estate guy, not exactly a national security expert. So, Jim, what do you make of the hubbub over the story and then also the immediate defense of Kushner?
Sure. Well, the first thing I guess we should note that the marginal good news is that, no, they didn't establish this back channel of any significant permanence. And as far as we know, neither Kushner nor Flynn went to the Russian embassy and started using the Russian skiff for communications with the Kremlin. That's the good news. You really got to setting the bar pretty darn low. I think what I walk away from this story, and we should point out there's two variations of this story, that the version that came out in the Washington Post is that Kushner proposed this, and that the Soviet ambassador, sorry, the Russian ambassador, boy, there's a Freudian slip, the Russian ambassador kind of exclaimed, you know, was surprised by this, was kind of taken aback by the suggestion of it, that it's either just hopelessly naive or hopelessly foolish or just unbelievably cooperative, depending on how you want to see it. I guess what I find myself, you know, really befuddled by, Greg, is this idea of why is Jared Kushner handling sensitive discussions with the Russians? Flynn, at least, I think you can understand. He's the incoming, at that point, the likely nominee to be National Security Advisor. He was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And even though we've heard some things about Mike Flynn we don't like, at least he's got enough of a national security background in his military service that you'd think he'd have the wherewithal what to discuss and what not to discuss in discussions with Russian ambassadors and representatives of the Russian government. Also, you'd assume Flynn would at least understand the likelihood and the kind of inherent danger of having communications in a Russian skiff. You're basically saying that, well, I'm going to allow the Russian intelligence organizations, the FSB and groups like that, to know what we're saying, but I'm going to hide this from the National Security Agency and all the American intelligence apparatuses so they don't know what we're saying to the Russians. You basically couldn't come up with anything more guilty-looking or guilty-sounding. Now, for what it's worth, Chris Wallace says that he talked to a White House source who said, look, it wasn't Kushner who proposed this, it was the Russians. Greg, I'd really like to hope that even Jared Kushner would have the good sense to recognize that's a trap. That's a terrible idea. That's the worst possible idea. You're basically saying, like, what's the most guilty thing that I could do? What is the best thing that I could do to make it look like I'm totally a drone of the Russian government and doing whatever they want and not trusting my own government? I've heard a lot of discussion about the deep state lately and people who are very upset about leaks coming from the government, and they have good reason to be, although we're never really sure whether the leaks are coming from the White House, the National Security Council, or the actual intelligence agencies or things like that. But either way, everyone who works for the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, everybody who's got a role in protecting America's secrets takes an oath, and that oath of loyalty is to the United States Constitution and to the United States as a whole. No one in the Russian government does that. So you really never should find yourself in a situation where you trust the Russian government more than you trust the U.S. government. I don't care how worried you are about leaks. I don't care if you think the CIA and the NSA and the FBI are full of a bunch of liberals, which is really not probably the best characterization of the political opinions or viewpoints of the institutions as a whole. You know, you just don't go and say, oh, I'm going to talk to the Russians at their embassy. I'm going to use their skiff because I trust them. You're not supposed to trust Russians that much. And you're supposed to trust your own government a bit more than at least is exhibited in this discussion here. It is really unnerving and weird. And I just kind of left, you know, flabbergasted that, look, if nothing else, Donald Trump went out there and earned those votes. He earned the position of commander-in-chief by winning the Electoral College. What did Jared Kushner do? He wasn't even on the campaign trail very much. Who is this kid? Why is he suddenly handling the most sensitive things in the entire government? And so I'm kind of left with this, you know, my colleague Andy McCarthy wrote this piece who basically said, look, we don't need the royal family, the princeling, stepping in and handling these sorts of things. The United States government has professional diplomats who spent their whole lives studying Russia and the government and the psychology of its leaders and all of this useful stuff and who have useful experience beyond negotiating New York City real estate. I think I'm on my last minute with Jared Kushner. I don't understand. On the one hand, I can say, oh, why is he at this stuff? Well, because the president trusts him. Yeah, and I guess the idea is the president shouldn't trust him, considering how he's handling these things. And other little matters, like the fact that it sounds like his family, certainly sounds like they're auctioning off HB5 visas over in China and things like this. I think, you know, whatever your perspective on Trump, I don't think it's hard to argue that Jared Kushner is serving his father-in-law and the president of the United States poorly. And some of this reflects the fact that he's never done anything like this before. Most people don't usually step into senior White House positions and negotiations with the Russians straight from, you know, the real estate industry.
Jim, you mentioned something in passing there that I think leads me to believe we should have looked elsewhere, perhaps, for one of the top national security positions. You mentioned that the Russians suggesting using their own SCIF as a communications channel was a trap. I know he's not American. He's not even human. He's not even from our galaxy. But Admiral Akbar acquitted himself quite well there in Return of the Jedi. So I think that his wisdom might have been useful at that point.
Look, if you can spot a trap, you're halfway to the end of the game. So, yeah. There you go.
Sometimes when you're looking for personnel, you screen them well. Other times you might not, since they're married to your daughter, which is the case with Jared Kushner. So did Jared Kushner have to fill out an application? I'm sure he went through some sort of background check. At least I hope he did. Are you hiring, whether through nepotism or otherwise? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else.
That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, more than 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. So this way you can have no more juggling emails or dealing with calls to your office. You can simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, as we mentioned at the top, listeners to 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Don't take this into your own hands. Let the experts figure it out for you and save yourself a lot of time and grief. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Transitioning now to our crazy martini, Jim. And we should point out that following our crazy martini, we actually have one last little nugget, so stay tuned for that. But in our crazy martini, as we mentioned, it kind of takes off in the opposite direction from what General Mattis had to say on Face the Nation. Mattis saying, "Nothing keeps him up at night. I keep other people up at night." Well, apparently that's not necessarily the same way it works over at the Department of Homeland Security. Late last week, Secretary John Kelly, also a retired Marine Corps general, appeared on Fox and Friends with Steve Doocy and Ainsley Earhart, Brian Kilmeade, and the gang. And this was, of course, reaction to what had just happened in Manchester, the attack on the Coptic Christians in Egypt that we talked about late in the week. Here's what Secretary Kelly had to say about the terrorist threats right now.
First, it's everywhere. It's constant. We've had 4 major terrorist attacks in a week in 4 different places, obviously Manchester, Egypt, Philippines, and Indonesia, by generally the same groups. It's nonstop. The good news is, for us in America, we have amazing people protecting us every day. DHS, obviously, FBI, fighting the away game is DOD, Department of Defense, CIA, NSA, working with these incredible allies we have in Europe and around the world. But it can happen almost here anytime. I was telling Steve on the way in here, if he knew what I know about terrorism, he'd never leave the house.
Never leave the house. So Mattis doesn't lose any sleep. John Kelly says the rest of us probably wouldn't leave the house. Jim, I'm not sure that's something that the public should know.
That's an exceptionally unnerving way of putting it, Greg, because the only way that shouldn't have us all sitting on the edge of our seat and looking over our shoulders is if the terrorists are in particular targeting Steve Doocy. On the one hand, I suppose I shouldn't give him too much grief. And by the way, it does seem like the Department of Homeland Security is doing a fine, or at the very least so far, knocking on wood, we've not had any successful terrorist attacks on American soil recently. Having said that, there's nothing like hearing the guy who's in charge of terrorism saying, yeah, I don't want to leave my house to create that, you know, make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Maybe he's being, a little bit of comic hyperbole, but look, the American society requires us to, get out of our houses and to go on with our lives. And we can't live in fear. So on the one hand, it does say something about the extent of the threat. And I suppose I should, thank him for his bluntness. But it's very odd to hear him saying it so bluntly and so clearly and unnervingly. Americans have to leave their houses. And so, the indication there is that, as he says, the threat is everywhere. Really? I'd like to think there's at least some places in America where we're not terribly likely to get blown up by an Al-Qaeda or ISIS or other terrorist bomb or something like that. So maybe he's just using a off-the-cuff language and not quite coming out right. But boy, oh boy. Not what you want to hear from the guy whose job is in being in charge of Homeland Security.
No, not in the least. As far as we can tell, he's doing a pretty good job. We know the attempted border crossings are way down, but something's better left unsaid, I would say. But as mentioned, one final feature here before we exit for the day. Jim, we are classifying this, in your words, under the not sorry to see you go. Manuel Antonio Noriega, the brash former dictator of Panama and sometime ally of the United States, whose ties to drug trafficking led to his ouster in 1989 and what was then the largest American military action since the Vietnam War, has died. He was 83 years old. Mr. Noriega, who became the de facto leader of the country by promoting himself to full general of the armed forces in 1983, had a decades-long head-spinning relationship with the United States, shifting from cooperative ally and informant for American drug and intelligence agencies to shady adversary selling secrets to political enemies of the United States in the Western Hemisphere. He was also a big-time thief, by the way. Illicit gains came to at least $772 million, although the White House at the time put it between $200 and $300 million. Noriega eventually grew more belligerent, and by 1989, American patience had run out. Lawmakers in Washington, some of them worried about the coming turnover of the canal to Panama, began asking more questions about his ties to drug traffickers. Opposition in Panama had also grown, ignited in large measure by the torture and murder in 1985 of Dr. Hugo Spadafora, a longtime critic. So we nailed Noriega. It was late 1989. It was a pretty short operation, a very successful operation. And as the article mentioned, Jim, for those too young to remember the end of the Vietnam War, this was one of the first major U.S. military actions they saw, with the Gulf War coming just a little bit later. But Noriega, a real bad guy, finally gone.
It is. And I think not sorry to see him go is a pretty good way of doing that. We'll see if, we'll see how St. Peter greets him. He may feel like he's back at the Vatican Embassy again. That aspect of the capture of Noriega always kind of stood out to me. The U.S. had invaded after the death of a U.S. Marine. Other servicemen had been surrounded in a vehicle. There are other signs of the Panamanian government stirring up violent hostility to Americans. The U.S. invades for 5 days, and then he runs to the Holy See's embassy in Panama. I believe it was like 10 days of the U.S. blaring rock music.
Yeah.
In an attempt to psychological warfare. Apparently, this was known as, I'm not making this up, Operation Nifty Package. which I don't know. I kind of like to say I was part of Operation Nifty Package. It sounds like something you get from Amazon or something like that. But anyway, yes, he surrendered, was put on a plane, taken back to the United States. And I think we can all openly agree, Greg, that clearly he was the inspiration for Die Hard 2. General Esperanza may have looked like Castro, but let's face it, the whole storyline about a returning Central American dictator and the U.S. drug war taking its first major prisoner and things like that, pretty clearly inspired by Noriega. So Manuel Noriega, not sorry to see you go, but I guess we should thank you for your role in inspiring a Die Hard sequel.
Now, was Nifty Package, was that just the loud music operation? Because I remember President Bush the First at that time referring to it as Operation Just Cause. And I always was curious if there was an apostrophe before the cause, so it wasn't just cuz. But we've got...
It sounds like a very lackadaisical justification. why did you invade Panama? Just cause.
We've come up with better names since then for military operations. So in any event, Manuel Noriega is gone. Jim, enjoy your time in New York. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter, because right now, listeners to 3Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Join us again on Wednesday for the next 3Martini Lunch.